guests. Appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you about Local History Group. We don't call ourselves a historical society, so don't get us quite into that category. We are not a historical society. We are what we call a local history group. And basically, we're a spinoff from the new library. Because back when the library was built, we had, in the planning for the library, we had three focus groups. And these were made up of local individuals who came in, usually about 10, 12, 15 people in a group, searching for something that was unique to Bradford. If you go back and look at libraries around this part, the libraries that have been built in the last few years, you'll find that each library has a special section in it. They aren't all common. For example, if you go into the library at Scoville, you'll find there a library which is named after Art Latcham, who was a builder in the Scoville area. And he was interested in magic. So if any of you are interested in magic, there's a whole resource library in the library at Scoville, special room set aside, and there's a whole, all the books that they could find on magic. So if you ever want to take that up, or if you have anybody in the family who wants to take it up, other libraries, I mean, that's one that I remember from the searches that we did when we were going around planning the library, but that was one. In Bradford, what the local people told us and came through the three focus groups was that they're interested in local history. When you look back at it, we live in a very unique area, geologically and geographically, but more and more geologically, because we live beside the marsh, which is a very significant area. If you are a biologist or a wildlife person or something, you talk about how the marsh has been ravaged, the wetland area has been ravaged and drained and is being utilized for all these things. They would like to see it back with the cedar swamp and bulrushes and so on and so on. But be as it may, it's a very unique area, and yet we never talk about it. Bob and I were discussing earlier this afternoon about the attempt that's being made to get a railroad to run from Beaton to Allison. And they're talking about the Strasburg Railroad. Have any ever ridden on the Strasburg Railroad in Pennsylvania?
Oh, yeah.
It's a real experience. And yet, you hear something that people could get involved in. We're talking about things historical, really taking the time. Anyway, our project is a spin-off from the library. We built the local history room, and I'll put a little plug in here for that other service club. we're quite prepared to share this responsibility with you if you'd like to get involved.
Yeah, we need more money.
But anyway, we did take some responsibility there with respect to, you know, how it happened was when the International President of the Lions visited our club on our 50th anniversary, usually you do something, I guess the Rotarians do the same thing, you do something in your community in recognition of that visit. And so when on that occasion the International President of the Lions, Judge Brian Stevens from Calgary, visited the club, we made a special donation to that local history room in the library. And as we have a continuing support, and so the Lions Club is continuing their support for the local history group, and we are a little bit of a nurse cow to it, and we make sure that whenever there are any financial needs that come a little, we're helping out with that. Our group is, as I say, we are not a historical society in the sense that we are gathering existing histories. We're not out writing histories. And the next thing I'm going to say is we are gathering in a little different context. But what we're looking for is to see histories that have been done. For example, the Knee Shaws, there's a book about the A. Thick on the chronological history of the Knee Shaws, put together by Ivor Rogers. Basically, it's a historical. But a very, because most of the people who are going into local history rooms are looking for information on their family tree. In other words, they're following up their genealogical study. So they're looking for history on a family tree. And this is the kind of information that is extremely valuable to them. We meet once a month, the third Thursday of the month in the Bradford Library. So if any of you are interested, you'd like to come in and meet with us. We have a group of about 15 people. We meet about 7:30, and when we finish up, the ladies provide, and we have cookies and coffee and so on and so on. And so it's a very, very, very interesting, very interesting. Right at the present time, what we're doing is organizing taping sessions. just what we're doing here. We just come in, we invite a family in, a husband, wife in, and sit down and say, we talk basically for about 2 hours. We just do that, builders up there with both sides for 9 minutes. The 90-minute tape. And we're going to put that into the reference library, just as it is, not edited or not transcribed or anything else. So if you want to find out what's on there, at the same time, we will log it, though, so we'll say that at point 120 on there, you were telling us about, the dad was telling us about his experience when there was a tremendous post farm or something like that in Bradford. He remembers when there was a major fire in Bradford or whatever. The other thing that we're going to do with it, though, is to set it up in such a way that we can't cross-reference the information, and that is a real challenge. We are blessed in Bradford with many people who have lived here all their life. I'm a newcomer. I've only lived here in the community since 1953. We were talking about that one day over in the Bond Head area. And they were saying there about when you move into a new community, how long does it take to be accepted? And the comment there, well, two or three generations will help. And so, like so many others, I'm a newcomer to the world. So. But by the same token, there are people in the community who have lived in the community for a long time. And Joe is such a person. And Joe not only knows this town, but he has spent endless hours in recording what has happened in the town. And he's gone through all the old Bradford papers and sorted them out, first marriages and so on and that, and just done a tremendous amount of work putting this together. And I was going to use the pun that Joe is not only a local historian, but he is also a saint.
Stretching your English language there, George.
Anyway, to talk to you a little bit about what your appetite about the history of Bradford, Joe Saint.
Well, George stands up, so I'll sit down. I don't know whether you know it or not, but I'll start over. Federal Farm Side Road, Bathurst Street, Federal Farm Side, the stoplights. North of the railway tracks. In there used to be a Dutch, they started out as a Dutch village, and then there were sawmills, this and that, and the other thing. But George Long surveyed Amsterdam in 1836. And up near the river, he built a storehouse for boats on Lake Gentle and a town site. The town site was down at the near Federal Farm Side Road or Bathurst Street. And some of the Dutch names that were in there were De Ruyter, De Witt, Van Dyke, Rubens, and Kaiser. And somewhere along the line, I've seen it, and everybody tells me I'm nuts, but there was a map of the whole village laid out there, all the street names and everything else in there. But the only thing that's left today, there's a schoolhouse. And where the gas station is on number 11, across the road, if you look across north of the railway tracks, north of the toll road, which the road goes up alongside of the railway tracks, is what they call a toll road, which you used to have to pay years ago to rent. And there's a brick building in there, and that was the third schoolhouse on that. The other two wooden ones burnt down, and that was it. And roughly in that section from there to the river, 200 acres of land, more or less, where Chizards were. Now, if anybody knew where Chizards were, that was it. Well, in 1869, Thompson Smith procured the property for a sawmill and extended from Bathurst, as I just said, to Federal Farm Road, which was concession to King Township, to the Holland River. At one time, Jimco County extended right over to Number 9 Highway, east to Young Street, up through Young Street, right to Holland Landing, and took in that. Somewhere along the line, nobody seems to know when it happened, but it was too hard to collect the taxes across the river, which they called it the Bullfrog Marsh and that. So they give it to York County for future references. But what the future references, nobody ever knows. Through the government, you'll never find out, I guess. But Now, then as you move on up further where Tizzard's is, there was a big, huge barn there when I was a kid. I would say it would be 100 feet wide and maybe 200 feet long. And the bottom part of the thing was for horses. And the top part was for hay and feeding. It was a driveway went right through from end to end. And this was where the horses in that stayed. And for the use on the sawmill. There was two houses on the property that I can remember. One is still standing there, but the other one was burnt down. And the one that was remaining there, Tizzard lived in, I think, for a short period of time before they went. And right in front of that, there was what they call a toll road, and there was a little building there, too. And that's for traveling up and down the road. You pay X amount of money for a fee and that. And years ago, they used to have to break stone, something like a Kingston. You should know about this. Something like a Kingston, how they break rocks. My dad used to break rocks down there to put put on this road. And they call it. And they call it a French measurement of stone was a toise, T-O-Y-C, and it took me about, I guess, 2 years to find out what this measurement of stone was. And they used to crack big stone to make it, instead of using gravel, they used these stones. And if you drive down that road today, which is kind of rough, but you still see some of the stones still showing up there. Then as you come right up to the river, where the boathouse is now and the dock is there, there was one sawmill on the north side of the road, which belonged to this here Thompson Smith. And there was another bridge, or another one on the south side, which was previous to that, in 1849, belonged to McConaughey. And I think that is the same name as what we used to call later on, there was a McConkey bridge here in town. But whether that's the same name or not, I don't know. And then the Centennial Buckle Bradford, 125th years, there was some of the workmen showed you a picture of office there, and some of the workmen was James Spence, which would be the father of Alex Spence's, and Jack Davy, which I think would be an uncle of Mark Davies, and then a Robert Collins, which would be Collie's father. Fred Collins used to be on the assessor for the town. He was on that too. And for this mill, there was roughly 150 workmen on the north mill. The south mill, we can't seem to find too much information on it. But when they first came out, they had what they call a floating bridge. And they hauled logs from Schaumburg district up to Bradford. They hauled logs from as far north, shipped them down through the water of Lake Simcoe and that from Orillia. And this floating bridge was there. Well, that was the sixth concession across, which is the south end of Bradford, the outskirts of Bradford on the south end. It crossed the river there, and that's where this floating bridge moved between there and the toll road. And on this floating bridge, that was where the first Irish settler moved into Canada. Armstrong, the Aljew, and the Wallaces. Well, the last one that I can remember around was the Armstrongs, but they're gone now. That was on the Metcalf run in the sixth line. Then in time, then these lumber mills, I guess the mills run out, and that the logs went out, and I guess got too much money to start moving around. So then a lot of these houses, what was over there, they turned around, they moved them into Bradford. And for instance, there's one on Holland Street East, where my grandfather lived in that, lot 13, and then another uncle lived on lot 15 there, which was down just right across the road from where Foodland is in there. And that's where they were. And then there was another one up on the southeast corner of John Street and Nelson, where they built that new apartment where George Harmon lived. And George always said that they moved it from Amsterdam, got it to the corner at the town hall there, and they got it that far, and then whatever happened, the guy quit. He just gave up, and he left it there. And it cost them more to move it the one block what it did to bring it the other mile and a half. So, but then there was other homes west, houses west of that. The where Mrs. McKenzie lived, I don't know where, and where Vail lived, there were two more houses brought in. And then right at the bottom end on John Street, there was another house brought in there. And now there was more than that one there, but I can't remember. Another thing, in back in those days, there was a big, heavy population of French here. I guess they came in to work in the lumber mills and that, I don't know. But John Street and that in the south end was called Frenchtown. The top of the hill up in here was called Tory Hill. And that's where I guess where all the good people lived. Well, then in later times, then in later times, the people off the hill, when they got a little bit more money, they moved down onto Frenchtown and settled down in there. But then on the south end of town here, there was where Simcoe Street goes down and makes a turn around that little hill on top there where Wilmot Mullis lived. We call that Piccadilly Hill there. Where that name ever came from, I don't know. But then you went out west here, and where the senior citizen, you went over on top the hill there, and that was California Hill up there because it was warm in the summer, but as cold as Hades in the wintertime. Well, then right where Marina's got his grave now, there's another little hill there right at that corner across from the gorge there where Marina is there. They call that Killing Hill because that's where they manufactured bricks in there at that time. And Morris lived in there, and he was one of the first ones that ever had the marshland. So, and James Durham, when I was a kid, we got always remember this James Durham being around here, and he was supposed to be one of the mill managers. And the original road that came into Bradford came up and crossed the railway tracks there and come up along the river road. And then when it got to about where Spencer Lumber's was, it angled the angle ways up there and come up on top of the hill there where we, well, pretty well across from where United Church is right now. That was the first road. And then the other road took off and went north. They call that the Penetang Road. And the other road took off and went south into the Scotch Settlement. Well, there was a tavern built in there. They called it Malloy's Tavern was built in there. And when they did number 11 highway, I think it was, they paved it in the 20s. I think they paved it in 1925. They moved earth from there to fill in the river road where they had to take it out here just lately when they paved it last year. And they found a well in there. It was supposed to be something like 16 feet across and 40 feet deep or something like that. Near as we know, that was the well for this old tavern and that. Well, then later time, they turned around and they surveyed the town. An old girl by the name of Letitia McGee, she was one of the early settlers here, and they had it surveyed and that, and that's when they laid out Bradford as we know it today, which is 2 miles square. So, the railroad came in about 1853, and they called it the Ontario Simcoe Huron Railway, July the 15th, 1853. And the first consignment that came in on the train was a chest of tea, a dozen brooms, and a barrel of salt. And, well, then there was that the, as you come up with the railroad then, just as you come over the bridge there at the river, there was a steam pump house there to pump water for the trains in those days. And when you get up to about where the ambulance place is now, there was a big water tower stood there. I don't know, 50 feet, 45 feet, and that's where the water was stored there. Then you come on up a little bit farther to about where Federal Farm or Holland River Gardens was, and then that's where the cattle yards and that was. And there was two right-of-ways across the railway tracks where they used to haul ice and that across there, and hay, marsh hay, and that's been called that, haul marsh hay down through there and across over there. And then you come on up to the station. Well, the station originally in 1853 was further north. I would say maybe, well, where they used to park the road train there. That's where the original station was there. Well, then in about 1900, somewhere in around there, they turned around and moved the station down to where the present station is now. And Fred Collins worked there. And another guy by the name of Peters lived there. He'd be an uncle of Teddy Dow. And he worked there, too. That's people all would be around here then. Anyway, and then just across the road from that, there used to be a railroad siding from up along and in back of where the Bradford Shippers was there, and from right up back of that, in back of where the Chinaman's restaurant is, and from right up to putting into Foodland there. And Luke's has had a mill there. And the Luke's has come in there, which is the same Luke's have had this place over here. And that mill was Sam Luke's mill. They come in here from in about 1879, and burnt in 1923. And they had Bradford at that time had a steam engine, fire truck steam engine that pumped the water with that. They tried to get it down to the fire, to the Luke's mill, to the fire, and the roads are so bad that she got bogged down and they couldn't do it. Well, then it burnt in the spring, and then the high school burnt in September or sometime like that. And I can remember being as a child that the glass that run down from the windows and that was just like icicles. And us kids used to get up and run right to stab. Of course, we got a hell for that. Well, then right down at the other one there, all right, then that mill burnt in 1923, and then it was there again until they tore it down and had the big fire. The United Farms had the big fire in 63, I think it was, and they tore it down in 73. And that building, that one and the previous one under the Luke's name, had been there for 94 years. Well, right down at the station then, where the Bradford Shippers is, there was a goods elevator right on the railway siding. What they used to do, the teamsters and that would haul grain from as far west as Putney to Allison, because in those days, back in that, Allison, I don't think, got the CPR tracks until about 1900 or something like that, so they'd have to haul the grain that far from over there, from all west to here, down into here. And I can remember as a child being used to out from school and that'd be bum rides, and they'd be lined up pretty nearly back to Middletown there, waiting to get into the thing. Some of them take a day, some of them take 2 days before they get under unloaded. So covered that end of town. Anyway, my grandparents, great grandparents, came here from England in 1871, and as near as we can figure out, I left too late to find it out, they got as far as Toronto, and then they were looking for work because they were in the brick building, and construction teams bringing this and that and the other thing. And my great-grandmother, her parents run a pub in England, and that's one thing they said, that most of the saints kept up that reputation because they spent half the time in the Queen's Hotel. But anyway, the big fire, Bradford had a big fire in May the 23rd of 1871, so right near as we can figure out when they got to Toronto with the requirements for work, then they turned around and found out that when they moved here. And they settled at two log houses out here on 88 Highway, just past the creek where the Anglican Cemetery is out there. And the saints lived in one log house right this side of Harry Williams' gate, and the church lived in the other one, and they intermarried, and that was that. But the big fire started about where Edmondson's big shop was, which would be Webb's Meat Market, but maybe you people know it better as Pezzanini's. Pezzanini's. The fire started there, the big fire started there, and it swept right straight down through there and took over in the Queens Hotel, across the road, took down there. And they got down to as far as where the town hall is today, and they finally got a stop there. Well, there was a couple of families in town here that lived down in back of Bartsville, down in, we used to call it Dukeville Avenue down in there. And
couple of women had babies at that time, and one of them was George Stewart, and the other one was Dr. Campbell, which lived on John Street. He was one doctor here before he was Libby. And they were both born, supposedly, the day of the Great Fire. And they moved them from there down on front of the mill that Luke's was there to, in case the fire, they didn't get it stopped, I guess. So supposedly then, there was 130 homes and business was burnt down at that time. And the loss in 1871 was supposed to be over $500,000. And the population of Bradford at that time was 2,000. And Bradford in the dirty 30s, not up until the beer came in 34, got down to about 900 people in that little. Anyway, the great-grandparents, their name was William and Sarah. Sarah was the one that her father had the pub in England. William, I guess he must have been, maybe the reason why he immigrated to Canada was maybe for health reasons, because he only lived about 4 or 5 years, and he was buried in the Anglican Cemetery out there with a lot of saints. And Thomas Saint, which would be my grandfather, married Mary Harmon. He was a stonemason, a bricklayer, and a plasterer. And Harry was another son, and he was married to Mary Shepherd. He was a teamster, a farmer, and a builder. Annie Mariah was Henry Harmon. She married Henry Harmon, which would be George Harmon's, that house that I was telling you that they moved across up in the back end of Town Hall in the corner where the apartment building is now. And that's Henry Harmon. He was a stonemason and plaster and this and that and the other thing. And Frank Saint, he married to Annie Campbell, and he lived there in those two log houses. And there was an article in the Bradford paper with George Stoddard had it in there, and he worked for the Stoddards, and he was 12 years of age. Took half of his pay in money, and the other half of pay was in grain or something, groceries or something like that. Well, then he moved back onto the 6th concession. That's where he married Anna Campbell, and they worked there. Moved from there to what we call Ham Corner, which is 10 side road in the 6th concession there. And he moved back there, and Annie died there, and he was a horse breeder. He imported Clydes and Perches from Scotland, and he was in the horse breeding business there. And supposedly, he moved to town here, and he was just east of what we call the old liquor store there, just inside of where Compton Story there. They built that little house there, built that for his mother and father there. And he was 93 years of age. There was an article in the Star, the dentist said he was nuts, but he was supposed to be getting his third set of teeth in 93 years of age. But that's as far as he ever got in his lifetime. Well, then there was another one, Arthur Saint, and he married Alice Smith. He was right down at the bottom end of John Street there on the left-hand side. He was a bricklayer and a stonemason, and he had one of the houses down in there that came from across the river. Well, there was George Saint, married to Ruth Archer. He was a school teacher and a builder and that. And I have a copy of the addition to the church where him and his brother Harry and that put an addition on the Anglican church at the vestry on that in 1885 in their own natural handwriting on that. And that was it. Well, then there was Mariah Saint. She married this Robert Collins, which was Collie's mother and father, and the one that I referred to before that worked at the mills. And these Collinses and that were all into the hay business and teamstring and this and that and the other thing. And he was coming down in the spring of the year with a load of hay in the back of the sleigh. The horse went through the ice and that, and so we tried to save the team of horses. He went in and he rescued the horse, but anyway, he got pneumonia and he died from pneumonia, and that was it. And then there was another brother, David, the only one that was born in Canada, and he drowned in the river there. And my father, his name was Leonard, and he was in the building trade. Started off with plastering, bricklaying, and then he went into cement work, which he finished off in that. Might have been in it for a while. Well, from the time from 1871 until Jerry Saint died in 1985, some of the saints are always in the construction business in Bradford up to those times. And a different place that Dad and his father worked on was the Presbyterian Church that built in 1893. The Anglican Church was built in 1900. And Algio's Tavern was on the corner of Holland Street and Church Street there, where Angel's Plaza is now. McGanny's house was there for a while. Well, that was Algio's Tavern. Well, then, and they turned, Luke's had turned around and bought that sometime. This Oscar Luke's had the mill. He bought that. And my dad and some of the other workmen there found four bottles of booze in there, up in between the rafters, supposedly from the time that Algy was there. And so he thought he'd sneak them out. Well, his dad caught him, and his dad was a temperance, which was too saints for temperance. But anyway, his dad caught him going out. So anyway, he got two of them out and got it down. And right next to where the taxi stand was there, and this side of the Queens Hotel is closed up now, there was George Ogilvy in there, and he run a tailor shop. And I guess that was the gathering place and that. So anyway, he dropped off the two bottles of beer there at lunchtime, or bottle of booze, whatever, alcohol or whatever it was, thinking that when he came home at 6 o'clock at night, he'd drop in, they'd have a few drinks. Well, when he got done working at 6 o'clock and down there, there was all, everybody stretched out, stone cold, laying on top of the tables and everything else. So the old man, well, I always called him the old man. So the old man, he never even got a drink out of it. And... well, then Luke's has left. Dad and his father worked on that plate down there when they do that. Well, then Luke's has left there and went up to what we call the castle right here. And in about 1915, they moved in there and repaired that place all up for Luke's to move into it. And another thing the saints did was that row of houses on the far side there, well, right from this street here up to the top of the hill. Well, not to the top of the hill, up to where about... where Woodcock lives in there. We went up about that far and built that whole row of houses in 1914 for George Stoddard. Well, then, I don't know whether George ran out of the money or what the heck happened to him, but anyway, war come along in 1914, and he took off and went to war, and that was the end of it. So they never finished the house until after that. Well, then, another building, well, they were in on the building of the Queen's Hotel. Queen's Hotel, as we call it now, is only two stories high. Well, then in later life, they turned it around and put another story on the top of maybe three stories. Oh, coming back to this McGanny house there. At the time, it was Luke's was in there, and at that, and they turned into private home. It was a three-story building. Well, then their partner come in here. He was a high school or a public school inspector, and he lived in there. Well, he didn't want the whole three stories, but anyway, his son, Bill, was quite a kid to tinker with radios and that, so they turned around and they dropped the top story down in one piece and brought it down and left just, well, I would say, maybe 4 or 5 feet, what we call a knee wall, 4 or 5 feet, and then the roof took off, and that was it, and he had that for his bedroom, workshop, or whatever, come, took up the whole, it was just quite a big place, and he took up the whole thing. And at that time, it was around about that time when they we first got the water in Bradford's Run. It would be about 1931. And I got the job of watering this building. And in those days, you had a brick building. You had to soak it like the devil so the mortar would stick to it and this, that, and the other thing. And so for so much money. Well, I did that after school and that with the town pressure and that. Well, then after I got it all done, they got it stuccoed. And they measured it up to see how much for the stuck wing in that gun. They found out the building was bigger. So then they weren't going to pay me because I put so much water in the building expanded that much money that they lost money. So anyway, after quite a bit of kibitzing around and that, they turned around and paid me off, and that was that. So, well, then they built the post office, which was the old post office there. I guess you would call it the old post office now. We built that in 1935. We just worked on the tail end of that. Picture show was built in 1936, which is down where D-Max is now. And the Village Inn, they all say that the Village Inn was always a hotel. Yes, it was a hotel from a way, way back up until 1871. Well, then when I got burned out in 1871, it wasn't built as a hotel. W.D. Watson came in off, retired off the farm in the sky. Somebody came in and he built a store there. And he was the W.D. Watson that, with Professor Day and Denny Nolan, that that had the draining of the hall in the marsh. He was the instigator. He moved out of there, and then he went to New Market. Well, then went from that to Jim Gray had a grocery store in there. He was a buyer for, as well as on the grocery store, he was a buyer for the grain companies on this goods elevator and that. Well, then it came along till, then it was a restaurant for a short while, and then in about 1937, oh, I forgot about that, in about 1937, then Ken Morris, which the river, where the Riverview is now, he built that place down there. And originally, at the time of the sawmills and that, they had a Malloy's Tavern there. And it was there on that site there, and it would run as a tavern and that, and I guess when things went belly up, then it folded up, and I don't know whether it burnt down or not. But anyway, they called it the Bullfrog Tavern because, of course, with the river and that, and chirping with the bullfrog. And then across the road where Page and Arnold was in there, there was another little restaurant in there, and that they called it the Peak Inn. And it had a brand of run around three sides, this and that, and they used to have world, well, it wasn't World Series when I was a kid, but there's some type of amusement there, but they were all dry outfits. Well, then Ken Moore said the other one, he built the what we call the Riverview Inn, which his father was, old Tom Morris that I mentioned, had the Killin' Hill out here at the marina, and he was one of the, and down in there, that's where the first, started the first marshland. He tried to drain that stretch in there where D&H Motors is in now. He tried to drain that in there, plant marsh in there, or vegetables in there, but they got flooded out so many times now. Well, then Ken come up in 1937. He bought the store and the restaurant that I was talking about there, and he turned it into a hotel. Well, Mitch Hepburn, a liberal, Bradford was always a conservative writing, which is, has been up for years. But this is Mitch Hepburn from St. Thomas. He was a liberal, and he came in with the platform that if you vote me in, I'll bring the beer in. Well, Bradford was really dead. So the beer came in, and he won the election, and the beer came in 1934. Well, all the Harry Lang run the hotel at that time, which just kept them busy to pay the rent and that. And your dad was mixed up in this. This deal here. And then when it come time to, he didn't have no money for the license, didn't have no money for the booze. So your dad and the old man, George Morton, and a bunch of more of the drinkers all pooled their money together, went to Barry and got them, or went to Toronto and got the license, went to Barry and got the booze and that, got them open. And that was it. So, and your dad boarded there for years. Your dad boarded there for years. And there was a funny thing, you hear them talk today about the amount of drinking that goes on here. In the Queen's Hotel, I would say from 34 up till, well, after war and that, right on Monday, on a Saturday night, which all the farmers came to town, did their shopping, got their hair cut and got their shaves and this and that and the other thing. If you were sitting in there, didn't manage to get in and got a seat, then if you had to get up to go to the toilet and somebody didn't hold your seat for a bit, by the time you get back, somebody else would take your seat. So there was really, and it was really packed. I forget now how many gallons of booze and I got. And that would be packed from, well, from pretty even well. In the afternoon, it was fairly busy too, but not quite as busy. But after supper, from 6 o'clock till midnight, you couldn't even get it. And then after midnight, if you got out of there by 11:45 and you still didn't have enough booze in you, you had it for the bootleggers, but you had to be at the bootleggers before quarter to 12, or the bootleggers wouldn't let you in. And the bootleggers here were just people that didn't have any, well, didn't have too much money, and to go on welfare in those days was the lowest thing you could do. If you went to jail, there was never no hardship, there was never nothing, they never thought nothing about you going to jail and that, for the winter to keep warm and that, but to be on welfare, that was the worst thing to do. But then again, we had, I would say, pretty nearly 10 bootleggers in Bradford. Well, then after the war, the beer and the liquor store came in, what, 46, 47, 48? Well, then inside of a year, we didn't even have a bootlegger. But the whole landing still had lots of them.
Who are some of the bootleggers? You got some names?
I don't know. That's an old one.
We're here.
Well, I tell you what, some of the names that would shake you if I was mentioning the names to you today.
Right,
yes, bootlegger was nothing. It was just what the hell would you call it? A place away from home and that. You run into the thing. It was just a place away from home that somebody, three or four of them up on the hill there, there used to be one way back in the corner next to the water tower there. Nobody around here knows them now. And Mag Vale's there. And we used to call that the Cave of the Winds up there. And boy, it was out of cold place in the wintertime. And she made home brew in that. Oh, dear boy. You talk about Mom, Pa, Kettle and that other outfit and the stay on TV. Boy, that was quite a spot up there.
On clear nights, we can still hear them howling.
No, there was quite a few. The
Becker stories of that day, other day.
Well, you see, then in those days, then Toronto had Jolly Miller was the last place, which is still got a hotel there. Well, from there to Bradford, there was Newmarket was dry, Aurora was dry. I think Sutton was dry. I don't remember. Bradford had it, booze. Barry had booze. They really had booze, but you went west. I'll bet you if you went west from here, you'd go pretty fast. No, Sheldon was dry. Right through to Kincardine and that, no one saw him was dry, and I would say right till you hit the water. And there was no booze, so so you know how people would flock into Bradford. But,
I don't know whether any, but a lot of you do remember Bradford, but being a new person to move into the community and walk into Bradford the first Saturday night, it was quite an experience. You had the Salvation Army used to stand, they had the band on the corner, and then you'd have a couple of fellows with baseball bats or tire irons or something, an argument and started in the hotel in another corner, and it was quite an experience.
When you left the village to go to the Queen's, you'd drop your money into the Salvation Army, and then you'd head on to the Queen's for another drink. Now, the Hydro came into Bradford in October 1918. They were trying to get it in before that, but then the war was on and they couldn't make it. Well, then the water came in 1937, which Denny Nolan, and we always said Denny Nolan was the most honest Catholic Reeve we ever had in Bradford. I don't know. I think that's about it. Any questions? Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
What did they get to fire the sawmills in that
building? Beg pardon?
What did they fire the sawmills?
Well, steam.
Steam.
And when we were kids in that, north of the bridge there where the boathouse is there, the sawdust is still piled up in there yet, because when he was doing the, putting that boathouse in there, he had all these slabs and that. When we were kids, there used to be all sawdust there, and the snapping turtles and the other turtles that would come out, and they'd lay their eggs in the thing. And you got so you could just tell by pretty much feel the ground where they were, and then you'd reach down. And a turtle's egg is about the same size as a golf ball. And you get down to take them back to the dock, and you could bounce on the wooden dock for maybe about six times, some ten times before they break. They were very, very rubbery, and the only way they hatched was through the heat of the sun, like you see. So, but then in there, too, there was boathouses in there. From there, and there was that's where most of us learned to swim after we got promoted from the canal down here where the Legion is. Most of us learned to swim there, and then as we got a little older, we went to the river, and that's where we swam, was in the boathouse before we could get into the river. So,
what was the attraction? Why didn't you build all these sawmills here? There seem to be quite a number of them. Why is it because they're at the end of the waterway, more or less? Or you
no, it was the big pines. It was a pine country. This was strictly a pine country. Mm-hmm. And from Innisfail, there was somewhere up in around Big Bay Point, there's a plaque in there. And the tallest mast in Canada was taken out of Innisfail and loaded on a train and shipped to England. And it was the tallest mast that was supposed to come out of Canada. Whether that's right or not, I don't know.
So this area wasn't always noted for the Holland Marsh?
The Holland Marsh never come in. Well, they started draining the Holland Marsh in 1925. It took them 3 years to go around the marsh, which is around the canal, which is 17 miles. It took them 3 years to get around there to come back down to where we are now. But before that, they called it the bullfrog or the skittle swamp and that. Cut marsh hay off it. They cut tamarack off it, which on the fat end up there, you see. But Marche, what they use, the Marche, first of all, the Marche they used to have down in where Alec just tore down his place there, they twisted rope in there and made rope out of Marche and that. Later on, they turned around and made mattresses out of Marche. Ben Collins had one there in where Brosa is now with his TV outfit. That's where Ben was in there, and he twisted, made mattresses there. And then later on, after the war, or before the war, they turned around and then they cut the Marche for packing dishes for Sears, or Simpson and Eaton. Once I can remember, once we were at Fennel's Corner and we seen somebody started to fire up where Robbie Watson is, the mouth of the river there. And we drove like the devil. I guess in those days, if you drove like the devil, you'd do it maybe 50 miles an hour. And before we got to the river bridge, the fire was down there, and she come down that thing that fast. And what they used to do, they'd burn one another out. There was three or four different outfits. Jim Armstrong was one builder. Shirley Watson, Robbie Watson's grandfather. He was one of the marsh growers. Ben Collins was a big one, or Cut Marche. Roy Story, his father was Duke Lowe. He was another one. No, but there's something else. Duke used to make carrot wine. Christ, is that ever good carrot wine? 25 cents a beer bottle full of carrot wine.
Joe, that thing on tape, when I was a kid, there was Jink Saint.
Yeah.
Saint and Swearing Joe. Where does Swearing Joe come from?
I don't know where I got that from. I don't know where the hell I got it from. We all had nicknames. I don't know why it is. My old man, as I call him, the old man, his name was Tracy. And everybody had, I had this Uncle Arthur that I called him. His name was Mike Saint. And crepe, up until the day he died, I didn't know his name was Arthur until we read it in the thing that his name was Arthur Saint. Oh, there's another funny. Hey, his son swung beer in the Queen's Hotel, and Jack Gap that worked for your dad? He slung beer in the Queen's Hotel, and both of them died of a massive heart attack in the Queen's Hotel. Flopped over on the floor. So then they said, after that, it didn't pay to go drinking in there. And what they used to do in those days, now, on the bottom of the Queen's Hotel, what they did, the big old steam engine there, they moved it in into the basement, and they burned 4 foot long slabs of wood and heated the building with steam heat. And in on the... where the end of the bar is today, and there used to be a steam pipe went upstairs. Well, until they got enough money to get rid of them, the cockroaches that are in there were pretty plentiful. We used to lay bets to see which cockroach would get to the top.